Also, we also have Mr. Opa Makashula. Welcome, Opa. And Mr. Barry Ho. There you are. The rest of the team, I'll quickly go through the list. I want to make sure that I've seen all of you. There's Mr. Ivan Pillay. There you are, Ivan. Mr. Logan Watt. Mandisa Mkwena. Jenny Padiachi. Is she outside? Oh, that's okay. Matobane Matwa. There you go. Leonard Khadebe. The man responsible for customs. And Nathaniel Mabetwa. And lastly but not least, Vuso Shabalala, performance analyst. Thank you and welcome. Kevin, we are all yours. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the committee once again for hosting us on this occasion. You'll see from the overview slide one, that the way we wish to summarize the strategic plan for you, and that's all I'm going to do hopefully in the next 20 minutes or so, is to make some introductory remarks which will indicate that for some years what we need to do at SARS at some stage or the other. Secondly, to point out to you that this is a new strategic plan for the 3 years ahead, and as we get into it, as I'm sure you have also, you'll see that some of the things we need to do go beyond that period also. Its essence is covered in two things. One is the modernization agenda, where there are 10 programs, and we indicate in the SAP plan specifically what we will deliver in 2007-08 and where the medium-term process is going. But also, in a section in the SAP plan, we say what the operational deliverables and challenges are for this financial year. We then indicate to you what the financials are in terms of the allocation from the Treasury for this year and the intended allocation over the next 2 years. On pages 8 and 9 of the strategic plan, and I'll refer to both documents here so that you can see the cross-referencing, we look at the economic overview for the next 3 years as determined by the Treasury, and which underpins SARS' revenue performance in many ways. On page 11 and 12, we look, or 11 in particular, we look at SARS' mandate and values, but on page 3 of the slide, 3, 4, and 5, what we did was extracted from the last 5 years of presentations to you the key points that we've been making consistently, which is then reflected in some of our plans for the following 3 years. Firstly, that we need to understand the tax base better at each stage, but more importantly now, to segment that tax base for service and operational purposes. The large business center, which Mr. Matwa represents here, is one example of that. And we want to, over the next 6 months or so, determine whether there are similar segments in our economy that we could deal with in a different way operationally. So that understanding will be reflected in our new operating model, which I'll come back to. We've said for many years what our compliance model and approach is, and that's reflected in the service charter on the one hand and in the risk system that we're attempting to develop. On page 4 of the slide, we're looking at the changing culture, work ethic, and performance management within our staff, and that's reflected in the people program, which Mr. Makashula will cover with you at some stage later, and the transformation program, which I'll return to in a moment, is reflected in all 10 programs of the modernization agenda as we describe it now. On page 5 of the slide, people issues and technology issues have always been challenges for us, and will remain challenges for some time to come. We've gone a long way to getting some of our numbers right and diversity right. What we now need a lot more emphasis on is developing professionalism, developing and enhancing management skills, continuing with our good progress on employment equity, and building technical skills on our side. And again, these things are reflected in the support programs of the management agenda. On slide 6, we state the obvious, and but we didn't bring the champagne with us, is that we celebrate, and you celebrate as a committee, 10 years of SARS in October this year, because it was this committee that passed the legislation which, on the 1st of October, declared SARS an autonomous agency. And to remind ourselves on slide 7, it's a sketch that we've often put to you, and which captures, because it's not, we've not remade this in any way, a long time ago, in fact around 2002-03, we said that this is the process of transformation that we will undergo. The only thing that hasn't quite behaved itself is the time frames at the bottom, because it's taken a lot longer to get to where we are. So as we sit today, we sit in the middle of the Piazza, both Piazza 1 and 2, and this plan is what our journey to Piazza 2 is about. And that again reflects, if you like, a consistent strategic approach on our side here. I then move on to the next section, which is our rationale for the new strategic plan. And in thinking about a new strategic plan, we did two things. We said that we've done and served the nation well up to now. We could certainly do better, but we also need to consider new challenges that we have. And that's why the reflection and diagnostic process was engaged in. And slides 9 and 10 look at some of the successes of SARS on the one hand, but also some of the challenges that we face. On slide 10 we look at, and some of you who have been around Chairperson will remember that in 1994, although you had very different sizes of so-called tax authorities, there were a number of them, and you needed consolidation post-1994. It's a thing that we've forgotten. Our diversity was very different from what it is actually today. And you can see some of the shifts on the slide that SARS has made during the past 10 years in particular. On slide 10, we look at the revenue performance over this period, and this is reflected on pages 13, 14, and 15 of the stat plan. So 1995, 123 billion, and in fact, if you add last year to this, it's 495 billion. So, and you can see that the compound growth is about 12.5%, and in some cases, like the corporate taxes, even higher, around 19%. On page 12, we look at volumes of paper, so assessments that we have to process. On the top left-hand side of the slide that you have in front of you, and you can see the formidable growth from this 90s over a 10-year period, from 4.5 million assessments submitted to 12.1 million assessments submitted. Similarly, below that, the growth in the tax register is also demonstrated. On the top right-hand corner, the growth in imports and exports. And the bottom right-hand corner, the percentage of the labor force that we have on our register, which also shows formidable growth. On slide 13, we depict the diversity journey. And you can see that the employee profile has changed quite significantly. And you'll recall, Chair, that during this process, nobody was put out into the street. There's been a process of attrition and growth, which has enabled us to develop the picture that we have, and of course there will be further development of the progress that we've made in this particular regard. Now, against that background, what are some of our challenges? And I want to take you to slide 15. Our first challenge here is that volume growth that we depicted earlier on, and this is on page 15 of your strategic plan as well, is out of tune with the growth in numbers of employees on the one hand, but also out of tune with the modernization of our core systems on the other hand. So we have a huge amount of pressure building up, particularly over the last 2 or 3 years, where the old systems and largely manual processes, although they've been improved over the years, remain in place. But there's a feeling we're beginning to knock into in respect of what we can expect the current group of people that start to perform in the volumes. The second challenge, which is on page 16 of the slide, is the whole challenge, Chair, as you heard through the Minister's announcement in the budget and the President's announcement in the speech to you earlier in the year, the delivery of the new social security system, and we apologize for the mistake, and the wage subsidy. And this slide depicts what processes we are likely to be going through. And there are currently processes which are being guided by the Treasury and with the participation of other departments, which will ensure that we have some clarity about what our role is going to be as a revenue service. And later in the year, we hope on the basis of the clarity on that role to develop a business case for that role for the Minister to consider. We pointed out to you on an earlier occasion that what this actually means is that the individual register, for example, will grow from something like 6 million probably closer to 12 million because we require every individual on our register. But similarly, if we're going to administer the wage subsidy, we require every business on our register as well with their full and proper employee information updated on a regular basis. The next challenge on page 17 of this slide is in respect of customs and border security. And here again, clearly there are a number of challenges which we've spoken about before. But an important addition here is the fact that SARS, during the course of the past few months, has been appointed as the lead agency at ports of entry. And my colleague, Jim Lavelle, now is the Border Control Committee chairperson. So there are additional responsibilities we have in this regard as well to try to enhance and promote better coordination and cooperation amongst border agencies. Each of those agencies, of course, and departments retain their normal functions, but this is a question of how we can, through better cooperation and a framework for that cooperation, enhance their role in some way. On slide 18, we look at the challenges that are posed to us by those volumes that I spoke about, the lack of integration around core systems, and the obvious synergies that are possible between customs back-end processes and tax back-end processes. And all of this means that we have substantial work to do in those areas, which are areas that we've talked about before to you as well, Shepard. We then look at what the new strategic plan is about at slide 20. And if we have to sum up, as we do on that slide, what challenge we face as a revenue service for the next 3 years, it's on the one hand sustaining and enhancing in an incremental way our operational performance, which, as you can see from the volume growth and the number of people we have, is a formidable challenge. But at the same time, our challenge would be to implement the proposed modernization program, without which there's going to be very serious difficulties in our capacity to both deliver the new government programs, but also cope with the volumes that we are faced with. On page 27 of your strategic plan and slide 22 of the slide, we summarize the three pillars, if you like, of the proposed modernization program. The first is a new operating model. The second is one that we mentioned already, the new government priorities. And the thirdly, the whole issue of enhancing certain fundamental processes within the organization to enable us to work more effectively. At slide 23, we are saying that this 10-part program is likely to unfold over the next 5 to 7 years. We are saying that we take on these challenges in 2-year bites, if you like, and that slide, quite similar to the earlier Siaka slide that we have shown you, depicts what we think could be the flow of delivery of these programs. Now, the first pillar then, Chair, is the new operating model of the three, and you'll find that in the slide just before slide 25. The new operating model, Chair, is based on four subparts, which is on slide 25. The first is differentiation on the basis of segmentation, which means, as I said earlier on, Chairperson, we need to understand, for example, how we define small business, what size the small business sector is, and do we, apart from the work that we've done until now, create the equivalent of the large business center for small businesses. Of course, it won't be one center, but it will be a number of specialized offices that deal with small businesses. Or is there another way of addressing the kind of service and assistance in education we need to do in that particular sector? Similarly, we might identify other sectors in the course of this work. And on the basis of that discovery, if you like, we will determine how to actually allocate our resources. The second element, as the slide points out, is an integrated and much more enhanced risk management system. And we'll talk about that during the question and answer time here. And you've heard us talk about this during the assessment process as well, which we'll cover later on. But this risk management process, which we are now basing on the implementation of the electronic data warehouse and the data mining software, will enable us to approach our operations differently on the one hand, but also approach our enforcement differently. Lot more intelligence-based, lot more information-based, lot more on the basis of statistical analyses of patterns in terms of what our colleagues on the ground are discovering. The third element is education, outreach, and customer service. We've come a long way on this particular road, but clearly there are things that we could do better. And in particular, we want to ensure that both our branch offices and our frontline staff at those offices and our call, so contact centers, are able to resolve issues the minute you phone, rather than come back to you or having you, or the taxpayer having to phone with a greater frequency. And we can talk about the details of that a little later. And of course, sitting behind all of this is enhancing our core operations. And the first installment of that, if you like, is the new assessment process itself. To give you an insight into, if you like, some of the challenges that require us to rethink the operating model, if you look at pages 26, 27, and 28 of the slide, and similarly, page 30 and 31 of the strategic plan, you will see that there's a curious inverse relationship between the taxpayer segments, if you like, and their relative numbers, which is the blue triangle on the left-hand side, and the amount of money they contribute. So the top triangle contributes the largest amount of money, you can see on the right-hand side. The middle triangle, about an equivalent amount of money, and the large percentage of taxpayers at the bottom of that pyramid contribute very little in actual money terms. There's also, if you like, a disproportionate allocation of staff. And the next one on page 27, in some ways, tries to illustrate that, where we have some staff at the front end looking at people who contribute a lot of money and probably also pose higher risk in terms of revenue collection. But they're not proportionate to either the risk or the amount of money that is actually involved at that end and the complexity involved at that end. Whereas in the middle of the organization, we have lots of people where the risk is not as high and the complexity is not as high, but lots of people sit in that part of the business. Similarly, it is very clear that notwithstanding the good work that our staff have done on the education side and in going out to communities and businesses, we don't have enough people who are doing that. So there's more and more requests that we intensify our education and outreach efforts. So if you look on page slide 28, our essential proposal is that we, through automation and better risk management, reduce the number of people who are operating in that middle sector, so to speak, in our back-end operational environment, put more people out into specializing at the front end where the money is, but also put more people out to continue to promote compliance, which is then consistent with slides 29 and 30, which is our compliance model, which you've seen before, Chair, so I'm not going to go into the details. safe to say that this model is also informing the way in which we craft our approach to risk. And a key element of this model is the proportionality principle, which we are beginning to make progress on in terms of penetrating that into the organization itself and encouraging more of our staff to adopt that as a mindset, so that we don't regard every minimally non-compliant South African as a criminal necessarily. And you've heard me talk about this before, so I'm not going to go into great length as far as that is concerned. Slide 32 onwards deals with actual deliverables based on the conception that we've just shared with you. So from slide 32 to 35, we do two things. On the left-hand side, we say what's going to happen over a three-year period, for example, in respect of segmentation on slide 32, and what you can expect us to deliver in this financial year. So in this case, we're saying that this project is now currently being scoped. There will be, within the next 6 months, a much better understanding of what the taxpayer segments are, and that will help us to begin to develop our strategies in respect of each of the segments. Slide 33 looks at the risk question that I've spoken about. So our ambition will be that we want to integrate risk scoring, better leveraging of third-party data than we've done currently, and link the operating model and risk a lot more closely than we might have been doing up to now. And our deliverable for this year is to increase the capacity and capability both on the enforcement side and on the risk side. Slide 34 does this in the sector of service. And slide 35 shares this approach with you in respect of enhancing the core operations of SARS. So that will then lead to, over time, Chair, and incrementally, the development of the new operating model. The second element is the delivery of government priorities. And here, if you refer to page 34 and 35 of the strategic plan, and slide 37 onward of the slide that you have before you, at this stage, there are two key elements in terms of government priorities that we are dealing with. The one is the social security and the wage subsidy, and the other is customs and border control and the role of lead agency at ports of entry, as slide 37 indicates. And again, from slide 39, we indicate to you what the deliverables will be. So for this year on social security and wage subsidy is the role clarification I mentioned earlier on, the strategy to deliver on social security tax and wage subsidy, and in essence, scoping what it's going to cost, because this will mean a fundamental change to many of our systems at the front end, at the processing end, and on the payment side as well, because we're essentially doubling, for example, the number of inverted commas taxpayers that we're going to be dealing with if this process begins to actually take off. Similarly, on slide 40, we need to further finalize our custom strategy, on which a fair amount of work has been done. Implement the first phase, which will be from July this year onwards, of the Customs Border Control Unit, which will also have a group of people with a lot better and stronger skills in terms of customs enforcement than we've had until now. As you know, yesterday, Chair, we announced that our tender for the scanners has been finally adjudicated, and that we've made the award to various bidders, and the first scanner for Durban was part of that and will be implemented in 3 months' time according to the commitment that the suppliers have made, now moving to a contracting phase and so on, which is an important part to ensure that government's interests are protected. The authorized economic operator is a crucial part of program customs internationally, which tries to essentially take that compliance model we spoke about and implement it within the customs environment. And this ensures that if you firstly have this scheme within your own country, and if you have a mutual recognition of authorized economic operators, say between the EU and South Africa, or Australia and South Africa, or the US and South Africa, then those companies that are and operators that are given this recognition will have a much smoother flow of goods between those countries. Now, it's going to take a little while to both A, set the standards in place, but the World Customs Organization has done a fair amount of work on that, but also get the mutual recognition element going as well. And the one part that we've missed out here is the BCOGC and the lead role at the border post. Strengthening the organizational foundations, you'll find that at page 36 and 37 of the strategic plan. At slide 42, we give you the four elements of this chair. Firstly, it's the management information capability and planning capability, which needs to be enhanced. Secondly, it's an implementation of the year of the people, as we've called it, within SARS, and doing much better at recruitment and talent management and performance management processes within the organization. So we've just recruited a top-class person from the recruitment industry to set up a whole recruitment center at SARS to ensure that we have a continuous supply of auditors and other technical skills that we require, particularly on the IT side, if we're going to implement some of the programs that government wants us to implement. And we don't operate that recruitment process on a sub-staff basis. Thirdly, improving the technology infrastructure and the facilities infrastructure, but also improving and taking on the challenge of communicating better. Slide 44 onwards, we indicate what our concrete deliverables will be in 07-08. In the human resource and managed planning and process areas, I beg your pardon, and the planning area, slide 45 is the talent management and performance management processes. And in respect of performance management, although we have a system, what's clear is that our old operational systems and more sophisticated ways of performance managing are, in a sense, contradistinction to each other. We need to, over the next 3 years, move to a point where we get metrics from the technology systems, not on paper and Excel spreadsheets and so on. And we will then be able to manage our performance a lot better and also develop the capacity of our staff. Slide 46 looks at the legacy system. And the second announcement we made yesterday, Chair, was in respect of what was called the network tender. And this is the communications network between SARS offices, all 100 and something, Ofgem, Customs, and Tax. And because of the growth in volumes, our current bandwidth capacity is low. And this new network, when it is finally installed, will give us much greater capacity to have the right kind of connectivity between our offices throughout the country. And of course, thirdly, there's the whole issue of enhancing our disaster recovery capabilities. Slide 47 looks at facilities. And there's a lot of good work that happened under Mr. Matashula's leadership in this area. And we need to orchestrate the new operating model and what comes out of there with the facility strategy so that the facilities are available to implement any decision that we come to on in respect of the operational model. Slide 48 looks at the communication issue and change management issues. And slide 49 gives you a summary of what we've just been through. So the blue represents the three pillars, the new operating model, the new government priorities, and the organizational foundation. And the horizontal brown line represents the 10 programs that we've been talking about, both in general terms and in terms of the deliverables. Slide 51 is a summary only, Chair, because the details are on pages 22 and 23, 24, 25 of the strategic plan, where what we indicate to you is what our anticipated volumes are going to be. As you know, it's hard to predict how many income tax returns or PAYE returns are going to come in or how many containers are going to come in. But pages 22 to 25 spell out for you what's the workload in terms of the normal operations we expect to deal with in the current year. As far as our financials are concerned, which is slide 53, it's gone backwards a little bit, if you like, because you will recall that, well, maybe before I get to that, say that the left-hand side bars indicate what treasury allocations are at the moment, and I beg your pardon, what the revenue targets are, and on the right-hand side, what the funds allocated are. So your year-on-year growth on revenue is about 9%, but usually it turns out to be a bit more than that by the time we finish. Our funds allocated don't follow the same pattern. They stay at 9%, they don't grow. And the key problem is going to be, where does the money come from for the additional investment that's required for the modernization process? Some of that money we will find internally, but some of that money clearly needs to be in the form of additional allocation. If we look at revenue as a percentage, I beg your pardon, expenditure as a percentage of revenue, then for those 3 years, we're sitting at 1.02%, which is out of tune with what we used to get around 1.2, and sometimes slightly beyond that as well in previous years. Slide 54 indicates the MTEF allocations for SARS for this year and the following 2 years. And if I may then conclude, Chair, so that we can get into discussion, SIACA, in a sense, took us from the dumps and gave us a lot more capability on the service side and in the back office area and in the enforcement area, and also substantially increased our capability on the customs side. This modernization agenda is designed to take us another leap forward and position us for sustainable revenue performance on the one hand, but a lot more capability than we have at this point, but also based on a very different risk-based approach than we've had until now. But I must point out, Chair, that I was beginning to hint already that this is merely a plan, and that a lot will depend upon what we have money for and what we don't have money for, and how quickly through the processes of automation that we're going through now, we can begin to save money, which can then be invested in the modernization area. So that remains the caveat. And lastly, I want to thank the colleagues that you see here and some colleagues that are not here for their contribution to the performance of this organization and the development of this plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. There we have the plan. One of the things I picked up was you made a comparison between your revenue targets and your previous performance, and also your funds allocation. But even though the revenue collection has been at a good pace, but the increase on the other side, on the right-hand side, has not been commensurate.
I'm glad you're saying it,
Chair. No, I'm just repeating what you said. Yeah, indeed, it is a concern, and we trust that you are not going to be constrained by that in realizing most of the noble objectives that you seek to achieve. I see here the implementation of the social security tax, and it subsidy indicates that it is at a policy stage, policy formation stage at the moment. So you wouldn't be able to say exactly whether there is money, you know, set aside for that until such time that your role has clearly been defined. Did I understand you correctly? The implementation of the social security tax and the wage subsidy, you said at this stage it's just that
it's an idea.
So you would not be in a position to say how much has been put aside to implement.
Hopefully in the next 3 to 4 months, Chair, we will have some idea of the scope of what we're doing. There is a policy conversation happening tomorrow between the different government departments and entities under the chairpersonship of the Treasury, and that will clarify something. There are fairly regular meetings happening now, which will hopefully sooner rather than later give us some clarity on the direction we're going in.
Okay, here we have it, members. Questions, comments? Mr. Davidson, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Malato. In that order for now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for this very impressive presentation. Just a couple of questions come to mind. One is, I mean, if one refers to page 49, you talk about a modernization agenda, which really entails three prongs, so to speak, all of which I would imagine is highly intensive in the context of reskilling or upskilling. Because you've got the organizational foundation, you've got the new operating model, which I would imagine involves a good deal of reskilling, and then new government priorities, more particularly the wage subsidies and the security tax. And I just wonder to what extent you would anticipate encountering problems as far as that is concerned in the light of the so-called skills shortage that we have, more particularly in respect of something which the chairman referred to, the whole question of your role in the Social Security tax and the wage subsidy. And to what extent does it endanger the whole approach? Because there has to be a clear focus, and to what extent does that detract from the other foci that you have here? And the second question is one of, you passed the comment that this is just a plan. Now, you know, plans sometimes can be pipe dreams, and sometimes they can be plans which are in reality achievable. Are you confident that the time spans that you have indicated are achievable? And if they aren't achievable, what are the key variables or key criteria that will detract from the achievement of those plans? And then finally, on a more, shall we say, more practical level, one is never ceases to be amazed at the revenue overruns that are forthcoming every single year. Now, you have been before this committee and indicated the reasons why. To what extent are international comparisons of overruns commensurate with your type of overruns that you witness? Or are we still in a learning phase? Your thoughts on that. Thank you.
John?
We are always taken aback by presentations from staff, overwhelmed at the appropriate, you know, wording of our views, which therefore indicates the nature of good work that goes into the kind of documentation that we have in front of ourselves here. This is a way of saying bravo to all the team. So just two quick ones for me. Notwithstanding the matter raised by our Shadow Minister for Finance here, Ian Davis, the extent in which no, that's spending all of that. You collapse so much. Just one area wherein you still struggle, you still have strength, of course. An area of ICT and improving of your systems, especially with reference to the visit that you made to your office here at Bellevue. You collect so much, but you struggle, on the other hand. Maybe it's food for thought. As time goes, perhaps as part of your own bonus, but bonus that goes back into work, improving your system, so that you do, you know, better jobs as time goes. You obviously have all of that money placed into government. And an institution like yourself is supposed to be self-financing, self-funding, as it were. But you still have all of those you know, money from the state for your own operations. And maybe that's food for thought, as time goes. To an extent, there are set targets. You go beyond those. What then happens? Percentage of which could be retained in the organization in doing better your job. So that's the first point there. The second point, you have yourself, and yourself specifically as a commissioner. And above you, you have the minister. Issues of government for me. Most of, if not all, are tend to be corrupted. Institutions of government do have what we call them a board of directors or board of whatever. The person in charge reports to. For purposes of operational day-to-day, so that you are not stuck with having to see yourself and the minister you might wish to see once in a while, depending. If you could share some light to us here as to why are you not having such a governance model that looks into matters of that nature. Thanks for now.
Mr. Maloka. Thank you, Chair. My first question is more related to what the Honorable Johnson has just mentioned. Part of your modernization program is to digitize paper documents. So I just want to find out from our experience in Belgium whether is this a priority for this year, and whether you can give us some timeline, whether you'll be able to address that backlog that we have seen in Belgium. My second question, Chair, would be on the simplification of tax return forms. In our interaction with the Minister, much emphasis or reliance is going to be placed on third-party information. I just want to establish to what extent would this third-party information be correct in the event that you start to discard certain information and not require taxpayers to bring forth certain evidence. My last question, Chair, would be on the SADC investment and finance protocol that was presented before this committee. I think it's last week. I just want to find out whether the National Treasury discussed this protocol with your office and defined the responsibilities that you have to undertake as a result of that protocol. And just a write up regard would be what are your responsibilities in terms of the World Cup also has been defined, and what are those targets that you want, or deliverables that you have to attend to?
Mr. Maran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to extend my appreciation. It's a wonderful presentation. Now, again, it follows on what my colleague has said about this is a plan, she said, and it's dependent on sufficient allocation of financial resources. Now, obviously, we know that you can put anything on paper. Paper can't argue. And it's very patient in terms of what you can put on. So in other words, is this reality? Is this attainable? And it's specifically in terms of the dependency on sufficient allocation of funds. In other words, what is the probability that you will get a sufficient funds, or what is in other words the probability that you might have problems in executing this plan? Secondly, maybe just also on the relation, and I refer to the slide 28, where you are focusing on certain areas. You streamline the middle, which is fantastic. You increase the approach on your top part of where you get your revenue from. Now on the bottom part where there's an increased outreach, what is your expectations of future revenue from that bottom part? In other words, is that attainable? And you know, will you basically get a sufficient return on the investment that you will be making in that part? And then thirdly, it follows on what Mr. Malacco has also said in his addition to that, and that is the simplicity of the tax forms, which is absolutely fantastic. My perception is that is in terms of normal taxpayers, and that your provisional taxpayers still has to complete a very comprehensive tax return form. So you can just respond to that as well, and if there's a probability that will be simplified as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Panji.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think just a similar issue that was raised here is on the thought that the strategic plan is dependent on sufficient allocation of financial resources. I think generally, in terms of performance, SARS has done us all proud. Now, if a successful department like SARS is saying its future performance is going to be largely dependent on the sufficient allocation of financial resources, I think SARS has come with a motivation to this committee and to tell us clearly in terms of what it is budgeting for to ensure success. And because it cannot come with a half plan or with a full plan in a year down the line to say that there was not enough money allocated or the resources not available for success. I think I'm assuming here financial resources to make it a success, so therefore, timelessly, staff need to approach this committee and say that if you want us to perform as you've been performing in the past with our new plan intact, this is the source of motivation we are presenting to you to ensure that we speak to the Minister of Finance to get the necessary resources. I think it's at least a problem. The second point I wish to make, Chairperson, is that, you know, if you look at on page 38 and throughout, you find that you will say over the next 3 years we plan to have certain things done. Between 2010 and 2008 we plan to ... What are the key performance indicators and how are we going to measure your performance for this year? I have accepted the strategy and overall plan, but I think we also need to know clearly that what are your achievables for this particular year so that we are on board. So if when you do come back to us and you do say that, look, we are running into difficulty, you'll be able to have some measurement in mind to say, okay, fine, we understand it, so that we are behind you and then we are talking with each other, not past each other. Thank you.
Look, it's quite a number of questions, but...
Thank you, Chair. Let me make one general statement that covers points made by several honourable members, and then I'll wake up the rest of the team and they can make their contribution as well. On the question of whether this is a pipe dream, whether this is work that's going to wait until money is available and so on, let me clarify that we want to distinguish between normal operations, for which some 5.7 billion rand has been made available to us. Part of which, about approximately a billion this year, or a little less, is available for the modernization program. So it's not like we're starting with an empty container in this particular area. There is money to get things going. Secondly, there are a number of areas where work has already started. So once we get an opportunity to have detailed space before you, so there's a service program where there's lots of work going on, the assessment program, which led to the simplification of the forms and so on, and a new risk system underpinning it is also work that commenced some months ago on current money. So we're not waiting for money. But there are those new areas which will be booked, and I'm sure that the Treasury, because it is new, and those are new responsibilities, we'll take that into account. The minister in his budget speech did indicate that we will get certain additional sums of money over the next 3 years, but that has to be measured against what we think are programs that need to be delivered at this end. So if there are difficulties, if you like, at the outer end, they don't stop progress immediately. The scoping exercise, the planning, the kind of detailed understanding of what segmentation means or what improving the core systems mean, that work will actually happen. And some months down the line, we will look at, because that work is important, and that responds to Mr. Bambi's question as well, that work will determine what's deliverable when, in some cases as well, because these are still, if you like, at the formative stages in many cases, and in other cases, they're in the process of development, like the assessment program. Once that settles down a bit, we will certainly make available to the committee a clear set of deliverables that you can certainly hold us accountable for, which we have consistently done before. Then let's take some of the specific questions, Chair. Mr. Makashula will respond to Mr. Davidson's question on skills.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Commissioner. Yes, it is true. I mean, one of the biggest challenges that we have is how are we going to deal with, upskilling people on time to be ready for new systems, particularly when they get deployed. What we are busy doing, particularly, relating to the new assessment center, we are in the process of letting out in detail, standard operating procedures based on the new processes that we will be implementing, so that we come to understand exactly what are the new competencies that people will be needing. What part of the job will be changing from what. So, and that would help us to inform from a training and development point of view. So standard operating procedures would actually be able to tell us in detail to measure exactly what the capability gap is. And we're pretty confident that we'll be able to do that. And we also, by the way, take a lot of learning from SIACA. Remember, SIACA on its own was a huge transformational thing where we changed the way our processes worked in 2001 to 2004, and we've learned out of that some of the mistakes that we have done. So we are much, much better prepared, this time in terms of dealing with the capability changes that would impact our staff. The second part that we are responding to the challenge is, as the Commissioner mentioned in his presentation earlier, we have recruited a very reputable and highly skilled person to set up the talent and recruitment center on a permanent basis. It will be a center that is properly resourced that will look for all the critical skills in the market. Some of them will have to use talent strategies like graduate recruitment, even recruitment up to high school level. We have mapped out, our human capital strategy in that sense. And I'm sure, with the right person and the right resources, we should be able to address some of those issues. But there will always, of course, be a risk in terms of competing for skills in a country where, we have serious challenges around skills. We take that on board, and hopefully with the strategies that we have put into place, we'll be able to address it. On the training and development side, we are bolstering our SAS Academy so that it can rapidly respond to organizational needs from a training point of view. We're forming alliances. The other day, I met with the Canadian, border control people, and, they've opened up almost, their institutes there and saying we would have exchanges to say, instead of us reinventing the wheel here, there are other almost off-the-shelf programs that we can get from reputable and well-experienced agencies that have gone through this journey before. And the commissioner having been, the chairman and the president of the WCO, that helps in terms of getting to the solution. The OECD, for example, has comparative, analysis and studies, and there's a lot of leveraging that we can do from a development point of view there. And we're exploiting all those opportunities. For example, the OECD has come forward to say they want to base, starting in June, the regional OECD tech training center in South Africa, which will be manned by
experts from around the world, you know, on, for example, transfer pricing and so on, which are scarce skills that you cannot find in our country readily. And we'll leverage all those type of stuff. We already have the regional training center for the WCO in South Africa based here. So from a capacity point of view, yes, we would have challenges, but we believe that we have enough coming our way to be able to deal with it. Thank you.
The second part of Mr. Davis's question was whether this endangers, as he put it, the whole approach or distracts from our work. No, it's rather supplementing our work and very much convergence with where we want to go. Because if we can undertake the modernization of the core, it opens up all sorts of possibilities, both in terms of cost saving on the one hand, but the reallocation of people and reassignment of people to different tasks. It also opens up possibilities for career development, so that people who initially come in to do low-end jobs, so to speak in skill terms, but have an interest in tax or customs, can then move on to the more complex job, either on the enforcement side or on the service side, because both sides will require skills of a higher order. And that's our challenge now. We more and more are going to look for people who want to become career tax professionals or career customs professionals, rather than just have a job at SARS. And for the next few years, that's the challenge in terms of maturing the organization and creating sustainability. And I think we have an enthusiastic bunch of people, many of whom will eventually make that commitment if we invest in the right type of areas. The second question from Mr. Davidson was around achievability, time spans, and what could distract from delivery. Mr. Hall will address that.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner. A wise colleague of mine once described it quite well when he said strategy is a process, not an event. So I think we look at it that way. We have begun the top-down work that you've seen here, and we are busy drilling down the details with some more concrete plans, and then we'll break down what we need to complete this year and then what's the following 3 years. So how achievable it is, clearly, in our minds, we wouldn't have put it together this way if we thought it was completely unachievable. It does try to bear in mind a number of the realities of what we face today. But clearly the devil is in the detail, and we need to complete that planning work to be able to specify much more clearly what time frames we are talking about. And we hope to have that work completed in the next few months for this year. And clearly each year, as we relook at what we were able to achieve in the year concerned, and that will enable us to better predict what we would be planning to do in the year into the future.
The third question, Chair, from Mr. Davidson, was in respect of the overrun. And the more we look, we will find more examples of this phenomenon elsewhere in the world. And interestingly, it's also in countries like New Zealand and Australia led to surpluses for many years now. And they're looking for places to in fact spend their money. What we're also learning, David, from our work around the amnesty area.
Pardon? I'm exactly in the same situation as you.
We'll carry on until the rules come out.
Proceed.
Is that there are still areas of our economy that are, let's say, open to expansion from the SARS point of view. And there are obviously areas of economic activity that I'm sure the Statistician General will also say need to be both understood on the one hand and measured on the other hand. So if there's a learning, the learning is that we're in a developmental phase, which could last a few more years, another, maybe even another 5 to 10 years, before we can totally command all the activities that actually go on. But at the same time, things like the amnesty campaign, once they begin to have their reach felt across the population, will also encourage better compliance. So the new operating model, for example, once it begins to come into effect, will also sharpen compliance as well. So there will be contributions, if you like, from the compliance side and from the economy side and from the efficiency of the administration as well in that regard. Mr. Johnson's question on collect so much, but with the money, you remember here that, and we thank him for raising the point, and we should also say bravo, that this is a point that the committee has considered in previous years, whether the staff allocation should be a percentage of revenue benchmarked in some way, with some caveat if that's actually necessary. And in international practice, that's not uncommon, because it gives you the assurance that the tax administration enjoys its independence on the one hand, as assured funding is not too subjective to, or subjective to the winds of political developments in a country as well. But I'm sure that this is something that the minister will apply his mind to, and then have the conversation you can have with him, which is the same, Chair, in respect of his second point about the board. There are a variety of practices across the world. In many ex-colonial environments, there are boards. But in many of these situations, you find that the contact between the minister, as you correctly pointed out, and the head of the Revenue or Customs Administration is a very infrequent contact. In our case, virtually every 2 or 3 weeks, we will have a management meeting with the minister. And that is a rhythm that he is, if I may say so on his behalf, very insistent upon pursuing. So there's no lack of contact. In that sense, he constitutes the board. We report to him in terms of operations and other areas of our business. We would put to him this kind of strategic plan which we require to do in terms of the TSMA, and get his guidance in terms of where we go, so that we go with his blessing and under his policy direction ultimately. But again, Chair, that's perhaps a conversation that needs to be had with the minister. And when there's a change in our political environment in 2009, you might get a different mindset, a different approach, which might inspire a different set of structures. And you're right, the board is the one in an environment where there's infrequent contact, which will then monitor what happens. Invariably, these boards don't get into the substance of the business. They look at the financials and they look at the people issues, and sometimes service issues in environments where they should be. In other cases, you can have an advisory kind of structure. In our case, you know that we have an HR advisory committee, and we're reconstituting the IT advisory committee, given some of the changes that we are talking about here, so that we do have an outside perspective, and that enhances our governance. And of course, we have the audit committee as well. Mr. Malotta's question goes to digitization. Mr. Kitrita will address that.
Morning, Chair. Let me just say that the 3 to 5 year plan, the end game is full digitization. And how we plan to get there is a journey as you begin to see the new form, a sample of which I have with me. You have the ability to encode everything that a taxpayer enters into the different fields electronically, the ability to have it encoded into a two-dimensional barcode. During this current year, we will have a range of different ways that the taxpayer will interact with us. The bulk of this will still be a form that is handwritten, completed, which we will then capture and digitize at the point that we receive the form from the taxpayer. We also hope that more and more of our taxpayers will submit this to us electronically, which then gets to us in digital form, which will reduce the need for us to capture, and thus also the need for identity or the very probable capture errors that can take place. The next phase of this process will then be ultimately where, as we begin to get more and more information digitally, we are this year also starting a pilot project in our Alberton Centre, a new centre, where we will be building a bulk scanning facility. The scanning facility will enable us in the interim, while we, in fact, in South Africa, we never for a long time envisaged that all taxpayers will communicate electronically. And therefore the bulk scanning facility will allow this form to be scanned in and through intelligent character recognition be converted into digital form almost immediately, and then also processed and propagated through our systems electronically only. So that's really the journey towards full digitization.
There will also be an element of back scanning. We're discovering now that having large numbers of files in one location is a health hazard for our staff, as they pointed out to us last week, and creates all sorts of allergies and so on as well. So apart from the health reasons, access to records would mean that an addition to what we want to do currently would be the back scanning element. But we haven't quite scoped that yet, and once we have the Everton enterprise running, we'll get a better sense for what we can actually do. Two honorable members raised questions about simplification on the one hand, risk of third-party information management on the other hand. Mr. Pillay and Dr. McQuena are here. Let me ask Mr. Pillay to start, and Dr. McQuena can add if she wishes to.
Thank you. With the new assessment process, we've said to taxpayers that they need not send the attachment. So they will have to fill the necessary data that we require, but they keep the attachments with them. They have to keep this for 5 years. If in our risk process we do identify a variance, a problem, we reserve the right to ask the taxpayer to produce the attachment. So there is a fallback. Secondly, Mr. Chair, we have a risk system through which all the returns would be checked. This is a statistical risk system which will use historical information and which would consider the general category in which the taxpayer is. And if there are big variances, this will be thrown out for us to look at. Thirdly, we are already getting a variety of third-party information. However, we don't get them all in the form that we want to get them. And we're doing some work on this, and this is something that will be resolved fairly soon. There is more third-party information that we want to get, and processes have started in which we are talking to those institutions that have that information. So indeed, it is our view that we have simplified what we want. In fact, we asked for a lot of information that we didn't use. So we are asking now for only what we do need. It will come in a format that will be fully automated, and it will save us a lot of time, and we'll just be able to run the returns to the new risk system. And indeed, this is the international practice. And in our view, it's actually a huge improvement on the way we've been working for some time now. Thank you.
I think Mr. Pillay has covered everything separately, but I would like just to highlight that we have lots of access to third-party data information already, and the fact that it is underpinned by the statistical and data mining capability, which will be able to extract those variances and look into all those areas that warrant anything that is outside the norm. And the fact that lots of countries, Sweden, Denmark, have embarked on similar exercises and has been a success. And I think it will to achieve a lot of positive results for us as well. Thank you.
Okay, one example of this would be, and hasn't come to the forefront too much, but it's implicit in and very much part of the new assessment process is checking on addresses. We lose a lot of money because taxpayers haven't updated their address details with us each year. So we will post, for example, 4 million returns, but tens of thousands will come back because the person has moved from that particular address. This year, in preparing for filing season, as we call it, we've gone through an extensive address verification exercise. So some 60% of our addresses are now verified, which means that those people do live or use that particular postal address, but from outside sources. So it costs us a bit of money, but it also saves us a lot of money, ultimately. And so our approach for this year is those who have had correct addresses will receive their returns. Those that do not receive a return by the end of August or so must then approach our officers. We will print the returns for them, even help them to put it in. But we won't be wasting that money by posting to addresses that don't exist, or people who don't reside at those addresses any longer. So that's again, use of data mapping capability between data that we have and data that's available from external sources. Mr. Morozov's question again about the Select Finance Protocol, Mr. Habeva.
Thank you, Chair. I think I must quickly reflect on the Minister's, Select Ministers of Finance meeting that took place in December 2006 and quickly cover the issues that you raised around the Select Protocol. And I hope it will cover the questions raised. The first issue really was the issue of the move towards the SADC Union by 2010. Of course, South Africa's proposal was that the SADC Union should move towards 2015, and the compromise was really reached in terms of the SADC move to be a SADC Union by 2012. The second issue that was raised, of course, was the issue of SADC members in relation to belonging in multiple regional economic committees, which poses certain risks in relation to economic free trade agreements, economic policy agreements, and also tightening borders in terms of joint controls and one-stop border concept. And the last issue was the issue of the single administration system. And this is basically in terms of the manifest that is produced in our borders. The other issue that was raised in terms of admitting was the issue of the bigger revenue pool, which if you look at it in terms of the SACU at the moment, poses a risk in terms of the leakages in our systems and also the issue of the revenue formula. And I think between National Treasury, DTI, and SARS, we've been contributing to the agenda and actually shaping the agenda in terms of our own interests as South Africa. But as I said, Chair, I think the biggest issue around the economic free trade agreements and economic policy agreements that has been posed in the SADC protocol and the SADC meetings have been an issue for us. And again, the biggest one being the issue of moving into the SADC Union by 2012. Thank you, Chair.
That, Chair, covers that question about whether we have been consulted. We are regularly part of both the SACU and SADC meetings as well. Chair, and the 2010, was that with reference to SADC or the World Cup?
World Cup.
We're a bit confused about that. There is a structure within SARS between 10 to strengthen a lot more, and there is already dialogue happening within government structures, and we're beginning to work out what our responsibilities will be, do some benchmarking internationally, and prepare for the 2010 events as well. And part of this will be facilitated by Mr. Ravele's role. So let me maybe ask him to just comment on this on a government-wide basis as well, Mr. Ravele.
Thank you, Chair. As a government, there are a number of structures that have been created to look into this aspect. I'll focus my attention mostly on the Border Control Operational Coordinating Committee. We are part of the National Security Planning Committee from a point of entry point of view. There are a number of systems that we're going to introduce and launch by 2009, One of them is a facial recognition system at all ports of entry. That will be designated as 2010 ports of entry, airports, land borders, etc. This system captures images of tourists as they come in and clear immigration and match it against existing databases, either Interpol or various intelligence agencies of the world. We were looking into enhancing security at borders in relation to 2010 as part of the BCOCC. There are many other initiatives, like the building of the one-stop border post between South Africa and Mozambique. The cabinet has given up an instruction that by 2009 that building should be complete and system should be running. So there are a number of other smaller projects that we are embarking upon. Thanks, Chair.
Let me move on to Mr. Mare's questions, two of which have already been addressed, the funding one on the one hand and the simplicity of the form on the other hand. The other interesting question that you ask is, as we increase outreach, what is our revenue expectation? And clearly, revenue there is not available in plentiful form at the low end, but the compliance factor is absolutely crucial, as the amnesty process is showing. So it's quite clear that revenue per taxpayer will sort of slowly decline as we expand into that part of the tax base. But as we do cleverer work in terms of tax avoidance and fanciful structuring and so on, there will be a kind of balancing out effect at the top end as well. But the key would be whether every South African individual or business that has an income of above 43,000 is on our register in some form or the other. And in the case of Social Security, even those earning below 43,000 will have to be on our register as well. So it's about how we build up to creating the capacity to get all of these people onto our radar screen. On the one hand, to ensure compliance, but on the other hand, to provide the services that government wants to provide to them. But you're right. The revenue side is not going to be as exciting in that area. But seeing large numbers of people come into the system and remaining there on a sustainable basis, I think, is what's going to ensure our democratic future in terms of creating the right kind of compliance culture in South Africa. Mr. Bamji's point, we thank him for, in terms of motivating to the committee if we require funds. But let's wait until the treasury processes are done, because I'm sure they will take into account the new responsibilities that they've given us. On the KPI question, if we work on the basis that KPIs are both quantitative and qualitative, you'll find that on those cases where we indicate the 3-year versus 5-year deliverables, the right-hand side in many cases are, in fact, as I was looking through them, our KPIs, but we'll try and formulate them in a way in which you can manage us more easily, Chair, as well. There was one question which I slipped up, which my colleague is reminding me. This tax return, we're getting copies for you in a moment. The two-pager is not the only individual return, you're right. There is also a complex return, and the IRP is thicker in its form, the range of this, all right? As well. So the complex return has these two pages as the first two pages and then an additional 4 pages. We will try and get you some samples so that you can actually have
it. Thanks. Further questions? I'm going to Mr. Johnson, Mr. Davidson, Mr. Maloja again.
Thank you. My concern this time is in tax compliance and the tax base that I'm afraid the interest might be diminishing or you might not be collecting as you used to a fixed base.
We're having difficulty in hearing you.
I'm saying this time my concern is the share that you might in future not be able to collect as much as you are doing today. And our tax base if it might not diminish. On compliance, we've been or you've been actually targeting SMEs that are outside the tax network to be within, so that you can maximize our revenue collection. How many are there still big business or formal economy people in the formal economy that are still involved or that are still practicing this tax avoidance or trying to dodge taxes? And secondly, on the issue of free trade area within SADC, as now modernized, are we taking along our counterparts, our neighboring countries, so that as we move towards 2012, we don't have all those administration gaps as far as the central administration is concerned? And my last question here is on revenue. Most countries, especially developing countries, it's said that as also natural trade of concern, that 40% of some of our neighboring countries, they get their revenue from tariffs. Now, if we are moving towards a common trading zone, how much revenue do we foresee or those countries that those countries are going to lose? And once that have an impact on the South African side, to find ourselves having to carry some of our neighboring countries through. Through liberalization, how much have we lost vis-a-vis the liberalization process and also the spin-off that we got from the trade liberalization?
John.
Thank you. This being the year of the people, I would have thought that the same spirit in which the year has been declared, you know, starts with equality engaging in quite popular, not populist, but popular campaigns that really make it truly a year of people, through NGOs, religious formations, reaching out to the people. And I hear there's a lot of activism that is going on in SARS. I hear that a gentleman here talking about a strategy is not an event but a process. I read so much of some activist language in that one. I think that's the influence I would imagine of some of us that start, and also the year also being declared as the year of the people. If you could make a comment on that one, that's on a lighter note.
Thank
you. Babji is raising here that you also need to, you know, put so much trust on the pillars of our, you know, revolution in that, you know, year of the people.
One part of which was mass mobilization.
The one specific was on the import. The figure quoted there is increasingly from 197 to 207 and so on page 20 of the actual document. That's clear. My simple question on that one is that whether this figure does include the illegal stuff that gets into the country, or it only just talks of those official, you know, imports that are populating our nation. It's a simple question. Thanks. If you could just elaborate more on that one.
Mr. Davidson.
Just two questions, General. One is, I listened to Commissioner's response to my second question, I think it was on the overrun. And I asked that question because I was particularly conscious of a letter written by the IMF to the minister, I think it was in 2005, right about August 2005, where they specifically expressed concern at the lack of accuracy of us being able to forecast our revenue income on a consistent basis. And that's the only reason why I asked. Now,
I didn't think I got a very exhaustive reply from the commissioner. The second one, just in respect of debt management, that when, if you look at page 21 of the document, not much is said about debt management. What you do say is that you have a currently high debt book relative to international benchmark levels. And obviously you would seek to reduce that. And that leads to a couple of questions. One is, what is the size of that debt book? To what extent do you believe, what percent of that do you believe is recoverable? And what is that international benchmark level that you refer to? Questions about that, thank you.
Mr. Mlatt.
Thank you, sir. My question is more related to what the Honourable Mguni has just alluded to. I just want to find out from the Commissioner whether, in his view, the risk management model adopted by SARS is adequate, and whether there are any areas that have to be attended to.
Mr. Marek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a lot of, as I said, appreciation for what has been done, and that this is not detail, and the gentleman also said that sometimes devil's in detail. But I would just like to inquire about how do one approach specific inquiries. I've got a particular interest in individuals with disabled as the dependent and how you deal with that. My own experience is very positive with SARS, but I've also experienced so often people with dependents, with disabled as dependents, had very, very traumatic experience with SARS. On the one hand, the perception is there that not always the capacities within SARS to understand even the law in that sense, and the deductions and how you deal have to deal with that. And obviously that must be simplified as well. I mean, you know, just using a simple example. I know that in some certain cases, capital expenditure is deductible. Now, I know about a person in Pretoria, he's got, on the one hand, he's got an arm that size, and on the other side, nothing. Now he's opening his keys of his home with his teeth. Now certainly, you know, he was not aware of certain deductions that he can have. And to some extent, I mean, my plea will be to, how can we simplify it for those people? And I know from own experience that when you've got a disabled as a dependent, it is enormously costly. So it's not an evasion of tax. It is real expenditure to make, you know, to bring a bit of a level field for people with dependents or disabled as dependents. And somehow one wants to engage with staff on that without going into detail in a committee meeting like this. So somehow I want to find out how should one deal with that. And also to assist staff, but also to assist a taxpayer with a simplified form, but also make it, you know, address the real issues. Thank you very much.
And the last one is Mr. Afia.
Thank you, sir. Sir, what I would like to understand from the commissioner, hence we are in this journey of having this good working relationship within SADC and South Africa and SADC countries. I want to understand whether do SADC countries have equivalent structures like we do have, like WhatsApp, where there is a revenue collection and it is independent and all those other things. And on top of my question, whether in the early 2000s, there was an indication that South Africa, Southern Africa, has, in particular South Africa, has to assist SADC countries to develop and improve the SADC countries, their tax administration. Maybe if the commissioner can share with us as to how far is that when we move towards the journey of 2012, which Comrade Aaron has raised. So how far is that process? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Mguni, fear not. You can see that there's around me a very resilient bunch of people, and they are, as Mr. Johnson pointed out, also inspired by the activist talk and the pillar of mass mobilization as well. So for now, fear not. I think the money will come in. Are there, your second question was, are there formal businesses that are still dodging? I'm going to ask Mr. Mabeswa and Mr. Watt, who more recently have been responsible for the amnesty process, to just comment on that in terms of what their experience has been.
Thank you, Chair. Well, certainly on the small and medium-sized enterprises, we have, as we reported to the committee, received over 40,000 applications for amnesty, but we think there's still a lot out there, formal businesses registered as businesses that has not registered for tax. And the commissioner last week pointed out some of the anomalies in the business registration process that for now doesn't require these businesses to register for tax as part of the registration process that needs to be looked at. Unfortunately, there is not a lot of data available comprehensively in one place where one can find at one place all the businesses and for us to check whether they are compliant or not. And currently our enforcement process is doing a lot to deal with that situation. But I would say that certainly in terms of the amounts on our records and the amnesty applications, there's a lot more out there that is not registered for tax.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add a couple of issues in terms of this. We have seen an improvement in terms of the kind of interventions that have been put in place to educate the taxpayer. Our view is that, yes, there is a level of non-compliance, but there is an improvement, and that has been brought about by the fact that there is education or education interventions that are currently underway. Thank you. The next question from Mr. Mguni was in relation to SADC, and the fear questions are linked here as well, Chair. The first point is, are we taking our neighbors along in respect of the FTA? Yes, there is a SADC Customs Committee. That structure meets fairly regularly. There are SADC projects that are beginning to develop. There are corridor projects, for example, linking Maputo to the West Coast, the Trans-Kalahari Corridor, as it is called. The kind of improvements that Mr. Rivera was talking about earlier on in terms of one-stop border posts. So there's a number of things that are going on, and we did report to the committee on previous occasions, Chair, that there's a lot of capacity building happening from our side. I mean, the Civil Revenue Authority has been largely created with our assistance. We are currently spending almost 500,000 rand sending people there to install the custom system there. Similar efforts are put into Swaziland. We hope that both at a SAFU level and at a SADC level, we can get the political decision makers to say, let's develop integrated systems for trade. Let's remove as many of the administrative barriers as we can. Let's automate information collection so that trade data is more transparent. So that's one of the issues around the question that both Mr. Mguni raised and Mr. Sia about what who loses what revenue, who gains what revenue out of these processes. And I imagine in relation to that question, which was Mr. Mguni's next question, Chair, if you look at the SAPU line in the national budget that you review, it's been growing quite significantly. And it is running, I think last year was 29 or 26 billion. It'll come down a bit because last year's figure included some adjustments for previous years as well. But that's a formidable amount of money, and it does have implications if that same phenomenon has to occur on a tariff-wide basis, not just SAPU. But I think these are the issues that the political leadership in this country and our tariff countries are applying their minds to. How does it work? When will it happen? And how do we ensure that nobody is left worse off as a result of some of these changes? There's no doubt that internationally there's huge pressure on developing countries in particular, because as you pointed out, too many of them have approximately 50% or more of their revenue coming from customs tariffs, not from direct or indirect taxes, which means that their tax bases in their countries are not fully developed. And that's the challenge that liberalization poses across the world. And unless there is some other form of economic growth, some other forms of investment, those countries are going to be left without even that little revenue that they currently have. How much have we lost through liberalization? I don't have a clue here. So we'll have to ask DPI, because that's the department that's responsible for both determining tariffs through ITAC and implementing or asking us to implement what they decide through normal ministerial protocols. Mr. Mahashula and Mr. Ward, the year of the people, when are you going to talk to NGOs and religious formations?
Thanks, Commissioner. When we're going to talk to NGOs, I'll leave it to an activist, you know, to answer. But the year of the people originally was really concepted on the basis of it being an internal process where we will be saying this year we're putting the people of SARS, the employees of SARS, at the center of the campaigns of SARS. I'm sure, you know, Mr. Ward as an activist has interpreted it also, you know, as the year of the people for the people of South Africa. If he's got anything to say there.
Chair, my link into the year of the people, because OPA is really the HR guy. My link into the year of the people is the fact that it's also the 10th year of SARS existence. So it's the SARS 10th anniversary in October. And some of the activities that is in front of the executive at the moment would include a series of sectoral stakeholder engagements, just to talk about SARS, their experience of SARS and SARS's experience with them, and just to talk about issues of service and so on as part of the 10-year engagement, bringing out publication, possibly a documentary, and some other engagements to celebrate and more celebrate 10 years of SARS as an organization. And that will also be linked to the year of the people. So currently before our executive, there's a set of proposals that we want to do towards the end of the year to celebrate 10 years of the existence of SARS. Thank you, Chair.
John, the second question was on the import-export side. Clearly, those would be the legal goods coming in and out, because those are the ones we have a handle on. We do have our own reports on the illegal parts that we are able to intervene on, but they are obviously those that we don't see and that you might see on the streets of South Africa, but that's a quantum that we don't have quite a feel for in a specific sense. But as we understand non-compliance better, then we'll get a better feel for that. Around the world, it's very difficult to quantify. Everybody knows, for example, that counterfeiting is a multi-billion dollar industry, both in production terms, distribution, and consumption terms. but it's still a mystery as to how these things move around everywhere in the world, without exception, almost, regardless of the strength of your border authorities as well. So that's where we stand on that. Mr. Davidson's question in respect of the INF letter, if I remember, that was an INF Article 24 report, if I'm not mistaken, which indicated that we need to formalize the structures, or the structure through which revenue estimation is done. I'm not sure if you're referring to that. That was implemented, so there is a structure now for about a few years, chaired by the National Treasury, and at critical moments, as the Minister, I think, has already indicated to you, chaired by the Deputy Minister. Represented on that committee would be the Treasury, the Reserve Bank, Statistics of Africa, and SARS. And the estimations that come out are not the product of SARS alone, but the product of that committee. And they meet a few times over the year, and they meet more frequently as we get to, for example, the medium term budget policy statement or the February period to sharpen their estimates of where we're likely to come out. I'm not sure that's what you were looking for, David. On debt management, Mr. Pillay will look at that.
Thank you. The debt book at the end of the last financial year was 57.5 billion. And in the year before that, 2005-06, it was 59.8 billion. So we achieved a reduction of about 4% year on year. This is the second year running that we've managed to reduce the book. We're not satisfied with that. We need to reduce it much more. What this is saying is that we're succeeding in handling the debt that is coming on in those current years, and we're handling that quite well. We still have a considerable old debt to clear. Either we collect it or it's written off. And legislation has been passed recently that gives us greater leeway. And in fact, I think it was only passed last month. So it's only in this period that we can start utilizing that. It is now with this new framework that we'd be able to categorize the debt into the recoverable and non-recoverable portion. Previous to that, we were not able to. You will note on page 34 of the strategy plan that we will have a focus on improving the debt management system. So presently, we do not have a fully automated system. We hire an external system. It requires some manual intervention. So it's not the optimum. This would be one of the things we want to address in the modernization process. And the debt management itself, it's not just the collecting the debt. We are dependent on other processes in SARS. One of them is the assessment process and accurate assessment, the correct capturing of data. This year, with the new assessment process, we should see a vast improvement with the digitization. The first phase of the digitization. It will lead to fewer errors and fewer difficulties for the debt management process. So we're addressing the debt management, the improvement in debt management. It's not just within the debt management. The other things that we are doing to modernize SARS will also have a positive effect. In summary, the debt book is going down, 2 consecutive years, still a lot of old debt. We now have the tools made available to correctly classify this debt and to write off the debt that should be written off. And in the modernization program, over the next 2 years or so, we should have a new, or not a new, we don't have a debt management, automated debt management system. We should have one, and then there will be great benefits from the modernization of other processes in class. Thank you.
There's two other additional elements here, and that is that from an OECD study, we find that different countries define debt differently. And with the new legislation in place, we need to do some of that redefinition ourselves. So you'll certainly see new figures once we've completed that process. The second is that in terms of our own internal processes, we want to make a shift from debt collection and management to account management. And account management will mean that a sales officer is responsible for X number of taxpayers and will be responsible to ensure that they are registered for tax, that they are updating the contact details, banking details, for example, that they are contacted if a return is a month late or not waiting for 6 months. And then if they're entitled to a refund, if they do get their refund, but if they owe a debt, then that again comes in on time as well. So that obviously is going to be another journey, but our ambition or aspiration is that we move towards that so that there is a better management of the relationship between taxpayers on the one hand and sales on the other hand. Mr. Malhotra asked me whether...
Chairman, I just asked what for those international debt book benchmark levels that you referred to, and what you referred to, I didn't refer to, you referred to in your document, and how do we rate against it?
Again, that's why I introduced the point about the definition question. A quick look at it, we are okay. What we'll do, Mr. Davidson, is send you a copy of the OECD report, so you have a feel for this. We don't have it here, unfortunately. But when we've done our checking, we were within the sort of broad benchmark of what we see. But then there's those asterisks at the bottom which say it includes this or it excludes that. So, for example, our figure of 50-odd billion rand includes debt owing, but that is under dispute because of an objection process or an appeal process. Some countries exclude that figure. Now that figure, what does it stand at, Mr. Pillay, at the moment? 15 billion rand. So you can take out 15 billion rand, depending on the rules of the game, and so 55 drops to 40. Similarly, in terms of the new rules that the committee has looked at and which we now need to implement, some of that debt or uncollectible debt will now be written off. That will also take off an amount. So in the next couple of months, we'll have a fresh figure, if you like. But let's undertake to send you that OECD report so that you can have a look at it. Mr. Malhotra talked about the risk management model and whether I'm satisfied that it's adequate. I think it's certainly an improvement on what we've had before. And we now have a clear idea of where we want to go, what we want to benchmark ourselves against. And now that the technology is in place, we can only improve and not go backwards in any sense of the word. So I'm certainly satisfied that they are, and we described this the other day with the minister, that if you at one level, we are saying, you as an individual send us information on your return, we get the corollary from your employer, and we check whether you're declaring the same thing. The second is that we verify some of your claims about interest payments and so on from banks and so on. At a third level, we collect intelligence, which will then be fed into the system. So slowly, we're building up a... statistical model, which looks at probabilities and looks at patterns. And as you put more information into the system, you get better productivity from this. And this will take a few years to mature, like good cheese or wine, I suppose. And as we get better at it, both in terms of staff capability and the system itself, we will then begin to match the Canadas and the Swedens and so on in terms of using automated processes for risk management. Very few countries operate on a manual basis in the more advanced countries at the moment, and that's certainly where we want to go as well. But for now, it's better than adequate in terms of what we have. Mr. Murray, I have every empathy for your point around the needs of the disabled, and what I would suggest is that we talk when the chair declares a break, and Mr. Kittredge on my left needs to have a conversation with you. Let's sit down with that constituency. It's not our job to determine policy, so we won't enter new policy turf, but I'm aware of some of the things that you're talking about, and I think, some of the modernization things would help us. So if we have clearly on our system, person X is confirmed as disabled in a particular way, we don't have to check every year whether that is in fact a phenomenon, and I know sometimes that does occur. And in a sense, officers are just doing their job, but in another sense, it's, I'm sure, both irritating and unwelcome on the taxpayer side. But if we can talk to you and the constituency and work out what is manageable within our current operations, we'll certainly be willing to sit with you and representatives of the constituency and talk that out. So if Mr. Kittredge, then you can have a chat. Mr. Pierre's question, Chair, is whether select countries have equivalent revenue administrations. Virtually all of them, except, say, the DRC and so on, do. They all have administrations that have both tax and customs functions. In the last year or so, Mozambique has created a revenue authority. Mauritius has just launched a revenue authority as well. They all have separate tax and separate customs administrations. And there's a fair amount of exchange and dialogue and assistance that moves around amongst those administrations and leaderships as well. And in some cases, we've been very directly involved, like Lesotho, even Mauritius, and a bit with Mozambique also. And perhaps when we come back to you, we'll give you, I know we've done it somewhere, but I can't remember where around, a record of the capacity building work that we do in the region. That'll give you some idea of what we should do. So we have a philosophy which says whatever we have, we'll share. And we certainly plan to do that whenever we are able to. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, and your team. That brings us to the end of the session, and we look forward to future engagements with yourself, and we wish you well in your execution of your mandate, and we trust that the resources will continue to support you in that.
Thank you very much, and thanks to members of the committee for the hearing and the interaction. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I see outside. I hope it's not cold by now because it's in the sun. Thank you.